I am on recording.
Okay, good. Okay. So Cesare, it's your floor.
Right. So Zar is there, right? I cannot see. Oh yes, now I can see you, and you are able to share your slides.
Where are your slides?
On your email.
Let's give it a moment, but in the meantime, I can start speaking. So we have the next session, 5 talks. It's nice that it's an online, half online conference, because otherwise physically it would be hard to survive the 2.5 hours, but like this, it is quite convenient. So the 5 talks on, well, progress on learning for provers that do some kind of ordering. So, we start with Zar, make E smart again.
Almost.
It is ODP. Some fancy format.
I sent a PDF as well.
You did? Okay, here you go. Might have already downloaded that. Okay. So, and wait, now we need to share that. Just give me a second. Where's the Zoom window? Can everyone confirm that you can see the slides?
Yes, we can see the slides. Good. Then, Zar, please go ahead.
Okay. Hello, I'm here to talk about our proof of concept project to make E smart again. And to start off, I will give a very brief introduction to what E is and why E was smart before we did something to it. So E is a saturation-based ATP proof, automated theorem prover, which is like a theorem prover that works with resolution calculus with equality reasoning. And the goal is to prove a conjecture which we negate from some premises, and we start with 2 clause sets, which are clauses we've processed already and the unprocessed clauses, which is initially our negated conjecture and premises. And we repeat some loop where we choose some clause, and then we do a bunch of inferences with the clauses we've already processed, and then we have a bunch of generated clauses that feed into this unprocessed clause set, making it get bigger and bigger. And we rinse and repeat this until we've processed every clause, or we found a contradiction and proved our conjecture true. So the next question is to look at some components of E strategies and how E is smart. So there are clause evaluation functions, term ordering, and literal selection for some main components. So the clause evaluation function looks at all the clauses in the unprocessed clause set and evaluates how good they are to be chosen next. So one component of this is a priority function that partitions clauses into priority queues. For example, unit clauses, which are clauses that are only one literal, could be preferred with prefer unit, and then all of these will be processed first. Or you could use const prio, like in this example, where everything is in one queue. And wave functions order clauses based on some score, such as first in, first out, which is very basic. It means you'll eventually go through all the clauses you generate just in order. Or you can find some clause weight by counting the symbols in the clause via some heuristic. And there are some parameters here all set to 1. They're weighted by frequency of use. So here, clause weight is done 5 times for every 1 time that FIFO is done. And this is a messy example of one strong strategy for eProver. It was found via machine learning by my predecessors. The strategy E1, E2 is slightly shorter. And okay. Next are term orderings, which determine the rewrite order in eProver. Theoretically, they contribute to the completeness of the proof search, guaranteeing that if there is a proof, if we can find the empty clause, it will be found, and they can help prevent cycles. For example, given that x plus 0 equals 0, and the knowledge that it's for any variable n plus 0 equals n, we can rewrite from the larger to the smaller, like x plus 0, we can rewrite to x to get like x equals 0. But we cannot rewrite in the other direction, from the smaller to the larger clause. And usually the strategies in the work with Enigma have used the Knuth-Mendix ordering, although there are some others. And literal selection limits resolution and limits redundancy, also contributing to completeness. For example, if we have A or B or the rest of the clause C, and we know that it's not A and not B, there are two paths to use resolution to conclude C. And ideally, we only want to take one of these paths and not waste our energy. Okay. And a brief overview of the statistical learning methods that we've used with eProver, which are now slightly out of date, as they're using fancy stuff with like GVM and graph neural network. But for this experiment, I used XGBoost, which is a statistical learning toolkit that learns a bunch of decision trees via gradient boosting. So to do this, E is run in a bunch of, and the proof clauses are taken from completed proofs. All the given clause selected and completed proofs are taken, and the ones that are used in the proof are called positive, and the ones that are not used in the proof are called negative. And these clauses are mapped to vectors, and then as features, we take the vector of the positive clauses and the conjecture features and the negative examples with their conjecture features, and we learn a model that, given a clause conjecture pair, says this clause should be positive and used, or this clause is negative. Defer use until absolutely necessary. So this works via a weight function in eProver and ranks all clauses. Okay, so an example of the clause to vector map is the clauses are represented as trees, abstract variables, and so are abstracted here. F star, but various horizontal and other features can also be used. And XGBoost learns decision trees, like for this feature, if it's less than 0.9 for the given clause, then do this one, and if it's not, go over here and look at this bag of features, because another detail is that we hash the features to make the feature vectors smaller and more effective. And at the bottom of the tree is a simple recommendation of positive or negative. Use this or don't. Okay. The data set used is the Mizar Mathematical Library, which works on, is an interactive theorem proving system based on set theory, which has about 58,000 top level theorems and lemmas. And on our problems, premise selection is already done. Okay, so for previous results, at this time, the strategies I showed you, E1 and E2, prove 14 and 12,000 of these problems, and a strong Enigma model proved about 25,000. I think recently I saw in an email that a single model proved like 32,000, so progress is happening. But for the rest of this paper, I'll continue to compare the results to this Enigma 1 model, which proved 25,000. Okay, so finally, the research question of this paper is, Can Enigma learn to guide E without some of its strategies? So basically, we're making E stupid and pulling out many aspects of its cognitive functioning and trying to relearn from scratch with just like one cognitive process. So, okay, to do this, first we basically try and more or less remove term ordering. KBO is replaced with a structural identity relation so that almost all terms are not comparable. And based on the design of E, term rewriting is basically disabled so that like half of the inference rules in E cannot be used beyond some basic resolution calculus reasoning. And literal selection is disabled and only a very basic strategy is used. It processes initial clauses first and has its classic combination of clause weight and first in, first out. Okay. To train Enigma, it's a simple procedure. This strategy E0 is run to get some data. A model is trained over all that data. And then E0 with this model is run for more data. So it's this loop 0. And then we repeat and train over the initial data and loop 0's data to get loop 1. Then we have the initial data, loop 0, and loop 1 to get loop 2. And the main hyperparameters here are the number of loops of training, the number of trees, decision trees that XG boost are. So the first thing to try is 15 loops of training, 100 trees per loop, is that's something that was sort of effective in previous research, and stuff like fives or nines, trees of depth 5 or depth 9, and these are the results. So E0 is this dashed line here, and in the end, 13s was slightly outperformed 16s, and I did a one with 32 as well, and it was slightly below the 13s and 16s as well. And that's interesting, and more interesting is to have some form of adaptive parameters, although incremental parameters is probably a better name. So the idea is to vary the number of trees and depth each loop. And being a hacky person myself, the first thing was to try tweaking the parameters just by intuition as I go. Whereas a very similar result and slightly better could be achieved by incrementing the depth and number of trees systematically. So increase the depth of the trees from 3 to 33 over 15 loops and increase the tree size by, from 5 to 250 over the number of loops. And some other things are tried, such as keeping the depth constant at 32 and just increasing the number of trees, or decreasing the number of trees, keeping the depth, while varying the depth in this procedure. And in the first 7 loops, pretty much all of these perform more or less equally with some weird variation. They're close to the constant parameter version. However, later the incremental versions pretty much all boost ahead of the one that has a constant parameters. And there are various explanations for this that could be happening. It's possible they increase the diversity of the data, which also helps with the long-term learning. So I've not tested out that explanation for this, but I think the standard procedure with XGBoost is that one might want to start with short trees and learn those patterns and then increase to greater depth. One, you need to. Okay. And on the big data, training could take more than 12 hours. So a greater extent degree of the experiments were not done very systematically. And these ideas were not done in all of the experiments, but in some of them. One is like boosting a training with guidance. So I have the results using this smart E from E1 or E2 or this Enigma run. So I can use this data along with the E0 data to train E0 and see if E0 can learn from this data how to guide E-prover without the ordering. So it has examples of how E works with ordering, literal selection, and smart learning, and maybe it should be able to guide E anyway without this, without the ordering. And the other idea is sort of meta looping or whatever it's called, which is like maybe including all the data is not necessarily good or could lead to overfitting. So train for 15 loops, then take the best runs of that and only use that as guidance data, trashing the rest and rinse and repeat, hopefully getting more and more good data. Okay, so there's, you have the E0, you have our smart strategies, E1 and E2. Experiment one in green here was run via using the Enigma 1 data for those 25,000 problems as booster, and it's had okay improvement. E2, this orange one, was run using the data from E1 and E2, and started out slow, but sort of eventually crept up to this experiment one that used the Enigma models. And experiment three was done with a very small feature size of 256 via hashing and learned from scratch without any guiding or boosting data. And to my surprise when running it, it actually outperformed, at least initially, the versions that used boosting data. However, experiment three was run more intelligently as I took the parameters from this INC3 style of adaptive parameters and used that on the big data. Whereas experiment one and two were done before the grid search was done to find the best parameters. So experiment four uses this INC3 parameters as well as the data from E1 and E2, and not that surprisingly, it seems to do far better, getting into the range of the smart E strategies, which demonstrates that without that much hacking, the stupid version of E can be pushed to perform at a sort of baseline level. However, the Enigma versions are way up here in the sky. And experiment five was a very long chaotic mess that probably could be systematically distilled, but I wanted to see if there was some procedure of training the stupid version of E that would overtake these baseline strategies and somehow succeeded. Okay, the basic idea is sort of messy. It solves like almost 16,000 problems at a very high cost. Oh. I thought diversity of data might help it, so I trained Enigma models on 5K problems with 12 strong strategies instead of 2. And I tried a version of E0 that uses KBO ordering, thinking its data might perform a bridge between the stupid version of E and the smart strategies. And then I used both of this data to guide E0 on the full data set for to get like data zero just in one loop. And from that initial data set, then I did 10 more loops of training only using this data generated from E0 to get this new set of data, which, so this step four proves about 9 or 10,000 problems. And using this and the good Enigma 1 data again, with a very hacky set of parameters eventually led to this result. Like depth 1000 is sort of a lie, as the tree learner actually runs out of useful splits in the data around 300 to 500, depth 300 or 500. And like, I'm sure there's some systematic sense here that can be distilled with further experimentation from the ground up. So some basic takeaways of this proof of concept work is, first, Enigma can more or less learn to guide E without the smart strategies, like the smart clause evaluation functions, the good clause ordering and literal selection with theoretical guarantees. So trained on its own data, it has like a 156% increase, 256 if you have an insane evil mess of outside data. But another takeaway is that with all this effort demonstrating that Enigma can learn in this style, so far the term ordering and literal selection still seem helpful. And possibly with the new Enigma NG with the graph neural network, this gap can be bridged to an extent and that has not been tested yet. And possibly relaxing term ordering might help combine diverse strategies via different methods, especially if the strategies involve different forms of term ordering. And the best results are very hand wavy, so future research would be looking into how they could be systematically reconstructed. On the small data sets, I found very simple systematic strategies that performed slightly better than the hand wavy stuff. Possibly the research should focus on learning term orderings and literal selection schemes instead of just trying to replace them with an all-in-one learning algorithm. Can good results be achieved without guidance? Is the best results are achieved with lots of guidance, but there's some hope that maybe they could be. And thorough ablation studies would be good. So it might be good to experiment with all sorts of ways of setting up eProver. So how important are the orderings for learning? So what if we just use KBO ordering without smart strategies or LPO, or is there some minimal version of ordering that gives basically all the benefits with a bit more training without going through hell? How needed is literal selection with the good learning? And my experience was that training E0 requires an insane amount of negative data. Like, literal selection and ordering filter out very many generated clauses that now the machine learning model has to filter out on its own. So one question is, could eProver use two Enigma models? Could it have one that filters out obviously negative clauses that shouldn't even be generated? And then after that filter, you have a smart one that learns to just look for the positive clauses. Possibly this could be a future route as well. And yeah, that's basically this research. And if you want to know more about eProver, Stefan Scholz has good slides. Okay, that's all. If you have any questions, I'll answer to the best of my capacity.
Okay, thank you. So questions. So if there
I have a question. Yes. Yeah, I'm bringing the microphone here.
Can I ask?
Dave. Go ahead.
Yes, go ahead.
I'm curious if you divided, use the separate test set for evaluation, or if you just evaluated on the training set. And I think there were two cases.
It's only from memory. Is I tried in some experiment that didn't make it into these slides. I was training on a data set of 5K and I tried testing on a separate 5K data set, and there was some degree of the performance is about 70% of what it was on the initial on the training set. So it seemed like there was some degree of learning, but not as much. And then I got bored, as I was more interested in just seeing how far can I push this to learn everything on the full data set.
Okay, how about I ask you? I am a little bit surprised about your ordering. So you you have used identity ordering, but somehow the purpose of ordering is to not allow certain kinds of rewrites, but just by using the opposite, you may want to allow all the rewrites rather than disable rewriting at all. So I would expect to do the opposite, like allow it to rewrite in all possible ways, and then the machine learning to learn that certain rewrites are uninteresting, assuming other ones have been done, rather than disable everything and hope something is found. So could you comment on these two directions?
I think that was the initial naive intent, was to say, okay, this ORM will consider only clauses that are structurally identical to be the same, but I think eProver has a central term bank in which rewriting is done globally. So it might be tricky to have something that can rewrite things in any random direction while having the central term bank. And I'm not sure the best way to work around that is, it would be cool to have the machine learner learn when to do which sorts of rewrites.
In a similar way, well, when you think about whether it's interesting to look at LPO or KBO or something, you could just, well, after you have done a number of inferences, you can realize actually, well, this is okay with respect to all these orderings or all possible parameters of the orderings, and something would not be okay. So in this sense, maybe it is not interesting to consider a particular ordering, but to actually learn something, well, because orderings are things that people have observed on terms, well, we no longer need to consider certain rewrites. So maybe this is also something to look at. Any questions? I see no chat and nothing here. So that, as we have still a moment, I'll give one more comment about E2. You have said that E2 seemed to work well with a very small set of features. And this is also something that we have observed with reinforcement learning guided LeanCop, that we started with some projection of the feature space to a few hundred thousand, but then we realized that restricting the space to just 1,000 gives almost same results, that like you lose only 1%. So actually the learning can doesn't need all these features, that looking at a much smaller space, you can still recover this. So maybe a question related to this is, well, can we in a more intelligent way discover features that are meaningful for E, so for superposition?
And thus have a small but very succinct and useful feature set. That would be quite cool to find a small set of, say, 128 features that is highly useful. I wonder, a cynical part of me wonders if there are lower bottlenecks to the performance of a feature set that is too small. Like, what if with a feature set of 128, a lot of stuff can be learned quite effectively and quickly, but beyond some point, it becomes harder to learn more complex or nuanced patterns for like harder problems.
Right. Oh, if I can add something, it seems to me that the gradient boosted trees are so good that, like, no matter, or almost no matter how much we hash the features together, right? Like, let's say we have 1 million or I don't know how many sparse features in this corpus. Like, we just sort of apply a hash function which decreases the dimensionality like crazy without any smart procedure, without any embedding, blah, blah. And the gradient boosted trees are smart enough to basically pick up the signal in the compressed hash, right? So it's both about
the fact that we are running a simple hashing function and about the fact that the gradient boosted trees are probably pretty good at basically simulating the context, right? So it sees, okay, well, I have something here. Well, it might be decoded to some feature number one or feature number 1,000,000, but in this context, it is most likely feature number one or something like that must be going on there. It seems that basically the gradient boosted trees are doing something which the neural community considers to be an essential property of the neural network embeddings.
Good. Let's thank Zara again. And for the we have Pashut and Vezipur.
Can you
help?
Mm-hmm.